Going up?
How do I get to the Rudy Vallee show?
A Studio B, 8th floor. But they're rehearsing. You can't get in without a pass.
I have one.
Now step in. Watch the door, please.
Who's Rudy got with him on the show?
I think it's that Norwegian star, what's her name?
Ingrid Bergman.
Yes, I think that's the one. 8th floor. Studio B to your right.
Let's time it with the vocal. Trombones, watch those swatch sandals in the 6th and 8th measures. Fiddles, stand on the 3rd 8, and you're rushing it. Take it a little slower.
Slower, you want it? Slower? The way we played, it was perfect. No different would I play it if you held a knife in my heart.
My dear fellow, I don't know what you're talking about. I just know that I want you to play a little slower.
Mr. Valley, I am a violin player. You are a vagabond lover.
What has that to do with it?
Don't tell me how to play the violin, and I won't tell you how to love vagabonds. And now, if you listen to me...
I won't listen to you. You're talking through your hat.
So what? For years, I listened to you sing through your nose. For a minute, you can listen to me talk through my hat. Now, to start with...
Just a moment. This might be a good time to remind you that this morning, when all the musicians were in time, ready to start rehearsal, you were not here. Now, why were you late?
Oh, that, Monsieur Valley. You see, I was home asleep. When suddenly, telephone she ring. It is you. You want me here. I jump out of bed. I step on the dog. Ouch! The dog step on me. I put on my pants. I put on another pair of pants. I jump on my motorcycle. Voila, I'm here.
All right, let's forget about it. Let's forget about it. Nevertheless, I still want you to play a little slower.
Mr. Valley, do you mind if I subtly hinted something?
Not at all. What is it?
You know absolutely nothing about music.
On that point, I'm obliged to enlighten you. Not only have I a complete academic knowledge of the theory of music, but I have also mastered a musical instrument.
That I know. I happened to hear you play it this morning, and I want to ask you a personal question.
Yes?
Does your saxophone taste different lately?
This is all too ridiculous. I want you to remember one thing. You are but one of 30 men in the orchestra, and you can very easily be replaced.
A fine way to speak to Monsieur Jacques-Pierre Fontainebleau, first violinist. I think there's something you should know. Oh, last summer I played under Stokowski. What do you say to that?
Must have been mighty shady under there.
Now you make jokes at my expense. No, 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 no. That I do not stand for. That!
That's enough. I refuse to waste another moment with you. For the last time, I insist that the music in my program be played exactly as I want it played.
Ah! I have made up my mind, Monsieur Valley. If you tell me once more, just once more, that I must play the least bit slower. I am warning you. There's only one thing left for me to do.
And what is that?
I play it slow.
Well, I'm glad that's settled. All right, let's run the number through for time. Ready, Frank?
All set, Rudy.
Stopwatch. Let's go.
Sweet music makes a rainy day seem clear again. It brings you near again to me. Sweet music makes a bitter word grow sweet again. Two hearts can beat again in harmony. We've learned to sing a song in spring, and yet If I forget it by December, will you remember? Sweet music makes the same old story new again. I bring to you again my song.
What was the time on it?
1:25.
Fine, let's take the second musical bridge.
Mr. Valley, there's someone outside to see you.
Later, Miss Webster, I'm too busy now.
But it's Edith Gwynn of the Hollywood Reporter.
Oh, Gwynn, well, send her in.
Never mind, I'm in. In the reporting racket, Rudy, we can't always wait for invitations.
Well, you know, you're always welcome here, Miss Gwynn. Come into the mic here. Not only do I like to read you, but I also like to see you.
Well, I have a fan.
Why should I be an exception? After all, you write the newsiest, most fascinating, most exasperating column in Hollywood.
Gee, thanks, chum.
It's positively habit-forming. In fact, I wouldn't think of turning out the light at night before I read your column.
That makes me very happy. I understand there are some people who turn the light out before they read my column.
Miss Gwynn, when you walked through the studio door, I spotted a gleam in your eye that can only mean one thing.
What's that?
That you're just bursting with gossip.
Not exactly, but I could gab. Let's not dish in front of all these people.
Well, let's go into my office. Frank, rehearse the second bridge, please. I'll be back in a moment. This way, Miss Gwynn. Well, what do you know?
What do you want to know?
Everyone has expressed himself on the Barbara Hutton-Cary Grant situation. What's your slant?
Slant? To keep off with all the rumors on those two, you go around in circles. Why, Cary and Barbara would have to be five people if just half the stories circulating about them were true.
That's what I thought, but it's amazing even though their separation is 3 weeks old. It's still the hottest talk in town. Cary's a pal of yours, isn't he?
Yes, Rudy, Cary is a pal of mine. Has been for years. And a nicer, kinder, gayer guy never walked.
What about Barbara?
Well, I've only known her since she married Cary, and I find her sweet, shy, and very generous. As for that generosity, someday when the war is over, you may hear of the tremendous help that she has given to the cause of China. Not only in money, Rudy, but in personal effort. If the facts ever leak out, they'll amaze you.
But, Edie, you're digressing. What are the chances they're patching up their difference?
Not a chance, if you ask me. I say that not only because I take them at their word, but because of personal contact with them. It adds up to this. They were and probably still are mad about each other, but they just weren't made for each other. Their differences of background, upbringing, the people they liked, the things they enjoyed, all these things formed a breach between them that just was too wide to bridge. I've talked with both of them at great length about it, and both said just about the same things to me. Carrie's main concern seems to be that Barbara's going to get a rough deal from the press. He's hoping that nothing will happen to cause her any further hurt.
And what did she have to say?
She said the same complimentary things about Cary that he says about her. She also told me that her family couldn't understand why she would announce the end of her marriage while she was in the middle of a custody fight for her son. They begged her to wait until that case was out of the way. And Barbara said to me, "But I couldn't do a thing like that to a fine boy like Cary. Why should I hide behind the protection of his name and put him through all that strain and misery just because he was willing to go through it? The court fight for little Lance may take months, and Cary has a right to his freedom now. I must say I admire her courage."
Do you think she'll win her fight for her son?
No one could know the answer to that at this point, Rudy. But I will make a prediction about Barbara's future plans, and this did not come from her. Even though they've both denied any intention of divorcing, I think they will, and before very long.
Anything else on the subject?
Yes. I'll also go on record as saying that when her troubles are over, when people are free to travel anywhere again, then I predict that Barbara Hutton, the pale frail with a bale of kale, will make her permanent home, not in the USA or in Europe, where you might expect her to, but that she will buy or build a home for herself in Egypt. Wait and see.
Any more predictions?
Uh-huh.
For instance?
Well, most of the newspapers and magazines have Clark Gable and beautiful Kay Williams practically at the altar, but I don't think they'll get within miles of one, ever. If I had time, I'd tell you why, but I gotta go now.
What's the hurry?
Well, I'm on my way to a little party that Elsa Maxwell is giving for about 300 of her most intimate friends. The invitation says it's to celebrate the liberation of France. Anyway, Claudette Colbert, Frank Sinatra, Danny Kaye, Judy Garland, Jean Tierney. Oh, everybody will be around and no doubt entertaining each other like mad.
Sounds as though it might be the party of the year.
It sure does. I'll drop in at your rehearsal next week and tell you all about it, if I'm able to navigate. So long.
Goodbye, Miss Gwynn. Hello?
I have a long-distance call from Cincinnati, Ohio, for Mr. Rudy Valley.
This is Rudy Valley.
Here you are. Go ahead, please.
This is Bill Ramsey, Procter & Gamble.
Hello, Mr. Ramsey.
Rudy, everyone from our president to the newest office boy greets you as a highly welcome star member of our radio family, so to speak. You've always done a grand job of entertaining the radio millions, and we know you'll keep up the good work in your new series for Dream.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. We'll certainly do our level best.
Fine. Now, since I can't sing or act or tell gags, I'll just say good luck, Rudy, goodbye, and get back to work.
And that we will do. Thanks a million for your call. It's much appreciated by all of us. Goodbye, sir. Well, kids, that makes it official. Now, let's really whip into the Dream Show. Les Paul, we'll take your number next. Have your trio stand by.
Miss Bergman is in her dressing room.
Please have her come in a few minutes. Take this introduction for Les Paul. It is my sincere belief that this next young gentleman... No, wait a minute. Make it this young musician, composer, and arranger... is destined for great prominence in his field, and that before long, when he and his trio will be heralded as the latest musical sensation of the season. A large hunk of prediction, I admit. And I unhesitatingly stick my neck out. Presenting now Les Paul, his trio in Blue Skies. Les Paul, who when he plays, outdoes the facial contortions of some of our other great instrumentalists. I wish you could all see him. All right, Les, let's run it. Great boys, do it as well in the show, and you'll justify my predictions. What's next, Webster?
Top of page 18. It begins, as you say, "Once upon a midnight dreary, as I pondered weak and weary," and you're interrupted by the sound of a knock on the door.
Oh, yes, let me have the script. Thanks. Let's try it. Ready, sound?
Ready, Mr. Valley.
"Once upon a midnight dreary, as I pondered weak and weary..." What in heaven's name was that? The script calls for a simple knock on the door.
I'm sorry, Mr. Valley, but my script happens to call for a big crack.
Well, I have a script here, too, and it says here, "Knock on door."
And my script says here, "Big crash." Would you care to see it?
Yes. My dear young man, this is not the script for the Rudy Valley Show. This happens to be the script for the Bob Hope program.
Well, gee whiz, kid, is that bad?
No, it isn't bad. As a matter of fact, I'm a close friend of Bob Hope's. I have a very great admiration for him. I also think he has a great show. And now, if I'm not prying, do you think you're capable of giving me a knock on the door?
Am I capable of giving you a knock on door, indeed? Mr. Valley, have you any idea with whom you're dealing? Would you care to know?
Look, I just...
All right, I'll tell you. I am the man who presses the on information, please. And I'm the man who opens the on inner sanctum. I am also the man who opens the... closet on the Fibber McGee show. And furthermore, I am the man who... on Gangbusters. Now, what have you got to say to that?
Just this. You have wasted 3 valuable minutes of rehearsal time, and before the day is over, I will report you to the head of the sound effects department.
Oh, you will? Well, now, isn't that amusing? I'll do better than that. I'll put you in touch right now with the man in charge of this entire studio. An executive who has more knowledge of radio in his little finger than you have in your big, curly head. I'll call him right now. Mr. Drankwater? Mr. Drankwater? Oh, Mr. Drankwater!
Yes? Did you call? Yes, I someone paging me. Did you hear a scream? I mean, how you could... When I get... Here I am.
You're Mr. Drinkwater. You're the head of this studio.
That's
the head?
I'm the head. The foot. The chair. I mean, you can't. Would you scratch my back?
I'm sorry, but I just can't believe that you're an executive. Why, a man in your position would have to be a gentleman of polish, smooth.
Polish? Smooth? A gentleman? I'm polished. I'm smooth. Why? Every day I massage with Johnson's wax.
Fine. Look, I'm trying to run through a rehearsal of the show. I can't have you taking up my time.
Well, I'm glad. Well, you don't have to I take up your time. But you can. How can? When I get my my time is your time. Your time.
Mr. Drinkwater. Hmm? I can see you are getting nowhere. I'll take care of the sound effects myself if need be. So please forget about the whole thing, and thank you.
Oh, not at all. I'm glad to be of assistance. If you ever want help, I don't be afraid. You don't. I don't. You just call. When you help, 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 help. So long.
Just a minute, Mr. Drinkwater. A man who has achieved your position must have had some scientific background. What training have you had? Where did you study?
Oh, I'm glad you. Where did I study? Why? You get Harvard 4 years. Yeah, Princeton, Oxford. You get when I get. Reform school.
Well, that clears that up. But how did you break into the broadcasting business?
Well, you see, how you...
That's not what I asked you.
I misunderstood you.
What I said was, how did you break into the broadcasting business?
Oh, broadcast, breaker, writer, producer, engineer. I mean, when you get... I was a radio announcer. goodbye.
Now I've heard everything. Miss Webster?
Yes, Mr. Valley?
Take a note. Regarding sound effects in the future, the knock at the door, the man... Frank! Music! In choosing I'll Remember as my second vocal contribution, I picked it because it has the same poignant heartbreak something that made I'll Be Seeing You the most sweeping hit of the past season. Both songs are several years old, and both touch the heart as only memories of unhappy love can do. From an old Republic picture, the song I'll Remember.
I'll remember how I thrilled at the sight of you. I'll remember how the dream of my heart came true. I'll remember how we stood in the moonfall, so young and free, so glad to be alone. I'll remember cigarettes we forgot to light, and the sunrise that we missed when we kissed goodnight. All those moments spent in paradise for two. I'll remember.
Bergman, Mr. Valley.
Miss Bergman and I met before at the Hollywood Bowl at one of the bond drives. I want to thank you, Miss Bergman, for your willingness to be with me in my first show.
It is a pleasure to be your first guest on your new program, and I want to wish you every success.
The honor and pleasure is all mine. I've been reading the material that you're going to do in the show, supposing you tell me something about it.
The scene I'm going to do for you is from my newest picture, which will probably be released towards the end of the year. It was originally called The House of Dr. Edwards, from a book by Ben Hecht, but the title has just been changed to Spellbound. David O. Selznick is producing it, and my good friend Alfred Hitchcock is directing.
Yes, and I want to thank Mr. Selznick for his gracious kindness in permitting us to do it first.
I have persuaded another member of the cast to appear with me tonight to play the role he created in the picture. His was a famous name in Europe, not only as an actor, but as head of the Second Moscow Art Theater. And now that Hollywood has found him, the name Michael Chekhov will become equally famous in this country. The particular scene that Mr. Chekhov and I have chosen to do takes place in the middle of the picture. And because you're never supposed to know what's going to happen next in Alfred Hitchcock pictures, I can't tell you too much about the story. But at least I can tell you that this is a story about a young man back from the war and a woman psychiatrist who tries to help him. I play the part of the psychiatrist, Dr. Constance Peterson. I've fallen in love with this young man, and I am determined to cure him. And so I have taken him to the home of my old friend and teacher, Dr. Alex Brulov, to whom I've introduced this young man as my husband, Mr. John Brown. As the scene opens, it is the morning after our arrival, and I am just coming downstairs to Dr. Brulov's study. Alex. Oh, Alex, are you all right?
Good morning, yes. I'm all right, thank you. I must have fallen asleep in the chair. What time is it?
7 o'clock.
I was dreaming that you promised this morning that you would make me some real coffee.
Yes. I think my husband went out early. I suppose you didn't...
He didn't go out. He's over there on the couch.
Oh. He's all right.
Of course he is all right. He's sleeping fine. My dear child, do you think old Alex Brulov, one of the biggest brains who is in psychiatry, is unable to make 2 and 2 come out 4?
I should have known.
The moment I see you with a husband whose pupils are enlarged, who has a tremor of the left hand, who is on a honeymoon with no baggage, and whose name is John Brown, I know practically what is going on.
What happened?
Only what I expected. There's no use taking chances with a possibly dangerous case. I sit here, waiting. If you scream from upstairs, I am ready. So he comes down, and he is dangerous. I can see by his face. So I keep him talking while I put some bromide into a glass of milk. Enough to knock out 3 horses. When he falls down, I run up to see you. You are sleeping like a baby. And I come back here and sit by him to watch out.
The struggle against his condition aggravates him at times, but there is no danger in him.
Look here. This is what I found in his hand last night.
A razor? He didn't know he had it. Alex, please don't think that way. He didn't try to do anything to you. He couldn't.
My dear child, he is not responsible.
That's not right.
I'm just a little more experienced with this type than you.
I grant that you know infinitely more than I do, but in this case...
Do not complete the sentence with the usual female contradictions. You grant me I know more than you, but on the other hand, you know more than me. Woman's talk. Bah!
Alex, what are you going to do?
Something more for you than for me.
Alex.
I'm calling the police.
No.
You are giving me orders, my own pupil.
You don't know this man. You know only science. You know his mind, but you don't know his heart.
We are speaking of a schizophrenic and not a Valentine.
We are speaking of a man.
Aha! Love. Look at you, Dr. Peterson. The promising psychoanalyst is now all of a sudden a schoolgirl in love with an actor. Nothing else.
Alex, let me tell you about him.
What is there for you to say? We both know that the mind of a woman in love is operating on the lowest level of the intellect. My doctor told me not to smoke in the morning, but I am excited.
You are right. I am not a psychoanalyst, or even a doctor, not now. I'm not talking to you as one, but believe me, not what I say, but what I feel. The mind is not everything. The heart can see deeper sometimes. The shock of a police investigation might ruin his chances for recovery, and I can save him.
But if he killed Dr. Edwards, how can you help him?
He didn't. He didn't. I know.
But if it turns out he did, which I am good and certain, it will mean...
It won't. You yourself taught me what Freud says. that a man cannot do anything in amnesia that his real character would not have done.
And how do you know what his real character is?
I know. I know.
She knows. This is the way science goes backward. Who told you what he is, Freud or a crystal ball?
I couldn't feel this way toward a man who was bad, who had committed murder. I could not feel this pain for someone who was evil.
You are 20 times crazier than him. She couldn't love him if he was no good. This is baby talk, nothing else. What do you want I should do?
Give me time to treat him and cure him before the police find him and shock him into an incurable condition.
Oh, this could take a year.
No.
All right, half a year. We should sit and hide for half a year, waiting to find out if he's going to cut your throat, my throat, and set fire to the house. Oh, my dear child, even to a woman in love, such a situation must seem a little unreasonable.
Alex, just a few days. Before you turn him over, just a few days more. And if I can't do anything, if we both can't, then you can call the police. You are not hiding a criminal. There is no evidence against him, except his own guilt fantasies. He is wanted only as a possible witness as to what happened to Dr. Edwards. But in his present condition, he could tell the police nothing. Don't you see? We are doing nothing against the law. We are helping them by investigating the patient as doctors. Doctors who want the truth even more than the police do.
All right.
You will wait.
Go make me some coffee.
Oh, Alex. Alex, you'll never regret it. You shall see. We shall see. Oh, Alex, I know we can help him.
Yes, my dear Constance. I will pretend to myself that I'm acting sensible for a few days. And now, if you please, my coffee.
You shall have your coffee, Alex, and with an egg in it.
Someday I'll find you, moonlight behind you, true to the dream I am dreaming.
You know, girls, the world is just full of men who, deep in their hearts, are hoping that someday they'll find that girl of their dreams. And I'll bet you, too, are hoping that just the right man will find you. The danger is he may pass you by, without even realizing you're the one. So make sure he'll notice you and stop and look again. Make sure you have that kind of hair that catches any man's eye. Lovely, shining hair, gleaming with luster, sparkling with highlights. Every time you wash your hair, use Dream Shampoo with a hair conditioner. You'll get a combination of beauty advantages found in no other shampoo.
Dream actually reveals up to 33% more luster than any soap or soap shampoo.
Dream with hair conditioner never leaves any dulling film, as all soaps do, to hide the natural luster of your hair.
It brings out all the shining beauty.
And now that this new improved Dream contains a marvelous hair conditioner, it leaves your hair far silkier, smoother, easier to manage right after shampooing. No other shampoo, not a soap in the world, leaves your hair so lustrous and yet so easy to manage. Only Dream with hair conditioner.
So, girls, for glamorous, shining hair that'll help the right man to find you, always use Dream Shampoo with hair conditioner. Coast Guard Band Glee Club, attention!
A girl of the year wins your thanks and your cheer.
For beauty has now gone to war.
The charm of our nation will speed the duration. The girl of the year is a spark.
She's the girl you adore. Now you'll love her more. A Betsy Ross in Coast Guard blue.
From your own hometown, New York, to Puget Sound,
like Joan of she has a job to do.
The girl of the year is no longer blasé.
Her glamour has gone USA.
For America's sweetheart is America's star. The girl of the year is a star.
The silver shield is our insignia. It's the symbol of the Coast Guard crew. No one is more active in the war than the Coast Guard invaders who are fighting on every shore. It's been revealed the men of the Silver Shield are the sub-busting sailors who clear the sea of the enemy debris and they're leading the convoys through. The Silver Shield on the field of navy blue is the shield of the Coast Guard.
Time's up, Mr. Valley.
All right. Everyone back in about 20 minutes before the broadcast time.
Rudy Valley, rehearsal. Who's calling, please? Oh, just a moment. Mr. Valley.
Yes?
It's Ed Archie Gardner calling from Duffy's Tavern.
I'll take it. Hello, Archie. Yes, don't worry. I told you I'd be at the opening of Duffy's Tavern next Friday night. That's the 15th. I'll be there. And don't forget, I'm expecting you over here next Saturday night, the 16th. Yes, rehearsal, usual time. Oh, there'll be a lot of entertaining people in the show. What? Any tomatoes? Archie, please watch your language. Remember that at Duffy's Tavern, a pretty girl may be a tomato. But on the Valley show, she's a tomato. What's that? You're going to rent a tuxedo for our broadcast? Don't be silly. It's very informal. Please don't dress. What's that? You insist on wearing pants. Oh, Archie, goodbye.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.